right, thanks everyone for coming. Thursday, March 14th, regular meeting of the Planning Commission. We'll start, as usual, with the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First order of business to approve February minutes.
Make a motion to approve February minutes.
Please second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. On to new business. We've changed the format a little bit of the meetings to give the public a chance to speak at the beginning of the meeting instead of having to wait through the entire meeting, and then we'll have some time at the end for folks to speak at the end. So we're going to start today with anyone who has any initial comments or questions for the committee. You can speak now. And if you would, just use the podium and say your name.
Okay.
Sure.
All right, cool. I am Wayne Spalding. Tony and Kate and I are here tonight because we were able last year to put a septic in at the farm, and we will have this year a trailer that will sort of serve as a bathhouse. It has a functioning toilet and shower, and everything will go into the septic. We do need to have somebody stay on the farm because of the goats and the chickens and because of just general sort of keeping a watch on the place, because people come down there, even if we don't invite them to. We try to close the gates, but it doesn't always work out. So, we're moving towards having like a bathhouse, but we paid the farm property off last year, but we haven't quite got the money to put a bathhouse in. So we're hoping that that will work in the short term for one or two employees who will live there in trailers, and of course we'll do the camping permit. So that's one piece. The second piece is that there's a company, a Utah company called Bare Bones Living, that has, for whatever reason, an affection for our farm and for Tony and Kate in particular, and they have donated a lot of things to us, even though we're not a nonprofit at this juncture. But one of the things they donated was a lot of wall tents for. So one is like a lodge one, and then which theoretically is bigger. And I haven't actually seen them yet except online, although we have them. And then there's three that are like four or
12 right there.
Thank you. Does Tony need to stand up here too?
That's fine.
Because he can. And so the point behind the donation is that we would, because we have like farm mops from the University of Utah or from Slow Food Utah, that like to come down and learn from Tony and Kate and then help accomplish things at the farm, that they would be able to stay there in a more reasonable fashion than, to go camp elsewhere. And I'm hoping that it can work. And so I don't know how to accomplish that without getting crosswise with anyone. They're planning to also donate platform materials. We're not planning to run any electricity or anything. It would just be like for fare, and there would be no exchange of money. But I wonder if there's a way that we can do that without incurring anyone's ire.
How long do the farm mob people stay?
I think it would be no more than a week. I guess, historically, they never stayed longer than a week, but we didn't have, a great situation for them either. So, I mean, in my mind, to a certain extent, if they wanted to stay for like 2 weeks, it would be helpful. And then we do have workers that come, and we ask them for a two-week commitment. And I guess it would be nicer to put them in there. I mean, kind of the way we've handled it in the past is like there's a monument right behind our property,
yeah.
So we make them go camp up there to do the two-week thing. But then they're far from a bathroom, and, you know, it would be more convenient, I suppose, and probably, you know, it would be really better for everyone if they were able to stay in the walnuts, too.
Yeah. So, the most relevant ordinance that I can think of is the campground ordinance. So that's what I would look at to see if it would fit in there. So I think that, I mean, and you can look in there, and you can also have a conversation with Curtis. We can look closely at that and get more details about what you want, but that's where I would start looking.
Okay. I think, you know, long-term, so there's a third question. Long-term, you know, our goal is to have the farm be a little less ghetto and a little more, you know, Martha Stewart, Mary Butters. And so, you know, I wouldn't mind not having, like, even, let's say, a farm employee who's staying in a trailer have a way to stay in a more attractive wall tent. But the reason we're here, this is us being curious about what's possible.
Yeah.
And what works for the town.
Yeah.
And then the third part is that down the road, we are interested, we're not ready this year, but in actually building my bathhouse and a kitchen and being able to host maybe, you know, a handful of farmers down there and do that together. And, you know, my understanding was that with a property like that, there's a certain number of events you can do if you ask permission. And is that still the case? Or is it...
I don't know, at the farm?
Yeah.
Like a temporary event?
Yeah, so it would be like, okay. People have requested to do weddings there. We're not ready because we don't have proper bathrooms for them yet, and like I need more infrastructure before I would feel good about that. Or if we wanted down the road to do like a farm kind of farm to table, like outstanding in the field kind of farm dinner. But that's way looking down.
Yeah.
But I, you know, Tony and I were like, what do we
want
to ask? And we had this. We were like, we're curious about
people.
Let's ask them all.
Yeah. So I think, one thing I'll say, I think I can speak for everyone here, that we appreciate you actually bringing it to the Planning Commission instead of just doing it. and so I think we're happy to work with you to figure out what fits, and if we need to suggest some changes to ordinances, you know, I think we're willing to work with that.
That's wonderful. I really appreciate that. In the short term, you know, these tents, we have them, they're in storage here. We're interested in putting them up this year. We will have a proper septic flush toilet. You know, we still have the composting toilet, but I don't know that we will need that.
I believe there's already an allowance for camping on your property within a certain number of days.
So it just require a conditional use permit.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we should just apply for it.
Yeah.
And what are those number of days? Like 90? Is it like the one that we've fallen under in the past?
I believe it is. I don't know offhand.
Yeah. So ordinance 51 is modified by 72, so we would have to look at those days. But I have a question on the capacity of the septic.
Yes. You know, where's the plan?
It's two bedrooms.
I think it's around 750, but mm-hmm. I think that's a little bigger. My house is a little bigger.
And then I guess my other question is, so one of our complications for the farm is that we wait to move the chickens and the goats down there until they start losing their minds, because they're currently at my house, because we're trying to fit within a certain number of days that the town has historically allowed someone to be in a trailer down there. But now, if we have the septic flush toilet in the trailer that is has electric and like that, they have to stay only for 90 days because our season is longer than that.
Unless you apply for a building permit, then you could have it there for a year.
I thought it was 180.
I mean, I'm not guessing that we're totally ready to do that. Is there any kind of variance, conditional use variance, we could apply for under, like, agriculture and farm needs, or...
The 90-day is a conditional use permit.
Yeah, we apply for that every year. I guess I just wish that it could go longer than that, because our farm season is longer than 90 days.
Yeah, there's nothing that I know offhand in the ordinances that allow us to give you a permit like that.
Is that in 1 year, or can we apply for one and then apply for an additional one?
I think it's just per year.
One thing to keep in the back of your mind relevant to all of this is in other business tonight, it didn't get on the agenda, I'm not sure why, but the town council last week asked us to bring to the planning commission the idea of dispersed small, within under light manufacturing. Light manufacturing, the tail uses. And the idea is to promote cottage industry. Right now, the whole Greenbelt multiple use, which is most of the town, is confined basically to agriculture. But like you said, the event, or you said this or that, but how do you accommodate agriculture? You know, and that's what you're really getting at. How do you make this stuff work within the parameters the way you want to see things work? So that's going to be discussed, and you might want to participate or track those discussions and give your input on them as it comes up. I mean, it's not going to resolve overnight, but you know, the town council wants it taken up and kind of dealt with. So that might be a fit.
Yeah.
It comes down to.
So far, we're totally ag, like we pay ag taxes. We don't have built a house there or anything.
Yeah.
And it is just really the case that for our particular kind of ag, it's better if someone stays on the property, you know. And so trying to figure out how to make that work for us without flouting what the town's wishes are, we're in a little bit of a conundrum, because like we want to get more chickens, and you know, we lost a lot of chickens last year during the shoulder seasons when people weren't really there.
I personally don't think it's an unreasonable request to have a caretaker on your land for, you know, the season you need it. So that's something we can definitely talk about.
Yeah, so how would I spur that?
Do I just
make
did.
It formal? It would be really helpful.
The best thing to do is I'm supposed to intake this stuff, the zoning administrator is, and there's different applications. I think the best thing to do is sit down formally, if you want me to, with Tony, and just kind of go through it. We'll just look through the ordinances, and we all know about the 90-day ordinance. The tent and camping thing is, I'm not aware of any place that it's covered on private property.
What about the campground ordinance?
Well, if you want to apply for a campground, then that's a whole conditional use, and you know, we could look at that.
We don't aim to be a campground per se.
You don't have. I don't believe the campground ordinance or the language requires you to be a commercial campground.
Okay, but it might be what fits the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. So multi-use.
I honestly don't know without really sitting down and okay, here's the deal. Go and do the ordinances together and just saying, you know, what would work and what wouldn't.
Yeah, and this context will help us in the light manufacturing conversation. So I think yeah, sitting down with Curtis is good, and we'll talk about it in the context of other conversations.
Okay, that's wonderful. And I guess I would say the sooner the better.
You what?
If just the sooner the better would be good for us, like if it can happen, because we have 100 more chickens coming soon.
Yeah.
And we're trying to figure out how to...
What's the problem with chickens?
Just they need a caretaker.
The chickens right now are not on the property.
They're at my house, which only works for so long.
We can solve that immediately with a 90-day permit and give us the time to work on the rest of it.
That's a good point.
And did you say donate, did you say platforms? I couldn't quite hear it.
So they're wall tents, so we would put them on platforms because we have
no idea. I said platforms, but I couldn't quite tell for sure.
Yeah,
they're donating materials for platforms too. They're really nice.
So I think I'm going to suggest that maybe we table this. I think we have what we need.
Great.
And you can follow up with Curtis.
And then, you know, respectfully, I normally when I come to these meetings, I like to stay for all of it. But we actually all have more work to do at the restaurant in order to accommodate our 5 o'clock open tomorrow.
That's fine. The reason we really opened this up was so people could leave.
I appreciate that. And I'm very interested in what you're doing, but might be unfortunate.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for hearing us.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. We should probably unlock the door for you. Just kidding.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
Does anyone else have any initial comments before we start our other regular business?
Thank you.
All right. First order of business is to review the redraft of the residential short-term rental ordinance. And we have some copies here, 2 copies, if anyone wants one. Thank you.
We'll talk digitally.
So rather than go through the ordinance line by line, I think we can talk in, well, just... ask first if anyone has any comments or questions about the changes that Curtis sent. And maybe I'll just go through and just highlight the changes. We rewrote the fourth whereas clause to make it make a little more sense. There's language in here about that about occupancy, the requirement for occupancy for having an RSTR. We removed the requirement for a plat sketch and an architectural diagram of the different dwellings. We also removed the requirement to get written permission from any neighbor within 300 feet. We added parking space requirements, signage, although not really signage identifying essentially that people can identify the house when they get there. So it could be just numbers. We removed the requirement that someone needs to meet the guest in person on arrival and just changed it so that that person needs to be available, and that's either the owner or the manager. We added some language about public roads and public trails and public lands to the map. We added a requirement for a site plan showing the property, which seems to replace the plat diagram. We added the requirement that no more than one guest or group of guests can occupy the lot at one time. The property. So for example, if you're renting out 2 rooms in your house, you couldn't rent them to 2 separate parties. You could only rent to 1 party at a time.
Okay,
sure.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And we had a requirement for a description of a map, a description of a map of surrounding property. Changed the language about the fire pit. And updated the language about basically quiet time and dark sky time. So, actually, before we talk about the specific changes, let's talk about the overall changes. Curtis brought up two basic points that because we are requiring owner occupancy, the quota that we have in here may not be necessary. So that's one thing that I think we need to discuss. And I don't, that's the only major thing before we go into the detail, I think, unless anyone has anything else.
And Curtis also brought up the idea of how we'd split it geographically.
So right, yeah, that I include that in the quota.
Also, yeah. The minimum occupancy is back up again.
Okay, so let's talk about those two things. The
three.
The geographic quota and the occupancy minimum.
Or minimum stay.
Yeah.
Quota and geography.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They're sort of one for me.
Okay. Yeah.
Does anyone besides me want to start the discussion about the quota geography question?
Go for it, Perry. Yeah, you start.
So Curtis makes the point that there aren't many existing today. So this may, enforcing a quota, and what it states in here is that we will limit the number of RSTRs to a certain number within each neighborhood, Upper Boulder, Lower Boulder, and Middle Boulder. And that might be overly restrictive and unnecessary. My argument is to keep them in, and I'm not saying that we necessarily should, but the reasons to keep them in to me would be that if we remove the requirement that the person offering the property has to be a resident of Boulder, then it changes the outlook in that we might get a proliferation of these things. So we could either leave it or mention that.
I didn't quite understand what you said. If you remove the occupancy?
If we remove the requirement that people renting need to be residents of Boulder, then the number of rentals might skyrocket. And so the quota, even though we may not need it now, is a safety net for changes in the future, which isn't necessarily a good reason to keep it in, but that would be one argument to make, because that's I think one of the reasons we put it in there. The other argument I would make is that right now, if you look at most of the RSTRs that exist now, as much as you can tell, they're almost all in Lower Boulder, and they're clustered there. And part of the reason for that quota is to distribute them geographically. And so if we don't have that, then, you know, people in one neighborhood might all apply, and it might change the character of that neighborhood in a way that we didn't necessarily intend. So those are my two arguments to keep it in. And again, I'm not saying we should, but I think we should address those two things.
But you're still talking about keeping it owner-occupied.
Yes. Yes. This is in the assumption assumption that we're keeping it owner-occupied.
Yeah.
And I'll just say I think we should retain that requirement.
I do too. Going kind of on the other side of it, one thing that I keep thinking of is what happens to all those that are currently not. And that was something that Mayor Cox, actually, he asked because he wasn't going to be here, and that was one of his big questions, that he's really concerned that with the wording of the ordinance as it is, are we just opening ourselves up to a lawsuit? And if that's the case, he's not interested in pushing it that way.
As far as I'm concerned, and Curtis, maybe you can correct me, those become non-conforming uses.
The ones that exist?
Yeah.
Yeah, they are, but it's not just cut and dry. They are, but like Tori just passed an ordinance, and they said if the property changes hand, the use doesn't go with it.
Right.
Unless it then becomes owner-occupied, so now it has to conform.
It's
which is strange, isn't it?
But I thought we got to then decide, like, we can say that they are non-conforming, or say, and he's concerned that it's just going to eliminate them.
Well, let's define.
And that needs to be addressed.
Let's make sure we're talking about the same thing.
Let's address that, because he called me on that.
Yeah, so if they become non-conforming uses, then essentially what we're saying is nothing changes, but no new ones will be allowed. If the property changes hands, then that non-conforming use does not transfer with that ownership change.
If we put it in the ordinance.
If we put it in the ordinance.
Even that already exists in our other ordinance, the process of non-conforming uses.
Well, so it
doesn't say if it changes ownership, you lose the use. When all store changes ownership, it didn't lose the use. So it's a very complicated area, but my suggestion, I didn't put it in here, I didn't think about it until I was talking to the woman from Tory today.
Yeah.
And I went, oh yeah, that's a good one. I think we might be able to sustain. I haven't researched the law, the cases on it yet, but.
Could you restate what that is you want?
So if a non-conforming use property that has an existing RSTR changes ownership, the question is, does that non-conforming use ability transfer to the new owner? And that's something we should address. An example of where I think that kind of thing would make sense is if someone has built a structure within within a buffer that they shouldn't build in, but it's a non-conforming use. That's the kind of use that I think should absolutely transfer, because to move a barn or something is an unreasonable hardship. This kind of non-conforming use I don't think should necessarily transfer.
Well, sell it to somebody who's going to live there.
Well, but in that case, that new owner, I think, still has to apply for a conditional use permit.
In that case, probably the non-conforming use would continue if they met the terms of the ordinance. But that's the sticky question.
Okay, so we can at least agree that if they sell to someone who doesn't actually meet the requirements of the ordinance, then that non-conforming use should not transfer. That's what I would advocate for.
That's what I would put in the ordinance. If you're asking me, would it stand up in court? The answer is I don't know.
I'm not. Yeah. The question is, what do we want?
Right.
I'd advocate for.
Yeah. No. I think.
Okay. So.
That's a good.
Well, I think the point of that too is we have had a discussion, and this was brought up in their talks, that these RSTRs were intended to be in the home and not an ADU. And so it kind of takes away that problem, because they won't be building a separate building that a new owner would have to purchase and then not get the use of the RSTR, because it would be an ADU, right? An ADU does not have that restriction, right? Or does it? I can't remember.
We're talking about if the property owner doesn't live there.
Right.
You know, so the current ones that are there, it's not an ADU, it's the home itself.
The concern is, okay, the discussion here was that would it stand up in court, and would they be concerned if they put this investment in a separate building, which is an ADU? Now, the discussion is that the RSTRs are not separate buildings, they're within your home. That was what was recommended by
Right,
Carol,
but
right?
Our current ordinance allows separate buildings.
Yeah.
It says that it gives the owner the opportunity to use an extra building either as an ADU or an RSTR.
Yes,
the difference, so they could potentially rent out that ADU long term.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is they shouldn't be able to rent it out short term. That right shouldn't transfer.
Right. And I would agree.
Okay. So we're all agreed that we wouldn't want the rights to transfer to a new absentee owner. The question is, if they sell the property to, let's assume we have, well, no. If they sell the property to someone who's going to live there, so they sell to someone who meets all the requirements of the RSTR, do they automatically, does the use automatically get transferred or not? And I think not. They should apply for a conditional use permit.
I think they should have to reapply. They have to reapply.
The question is, can you deny them? And that's where I think you just kind of got to come down and say, well, if it's already there and it's doing it, and it is a resident, and they're going to live there, and they meet all the other requirements, because you're already impinging on the right, the property right, to this extent, saying, well, if you sell it to a third party who doesn't live here, it's not their primary residence. It's going to be extinguished.
Yeah, and
that's the kind of stuff that's right. Litigated.
And I don't think we need to decide whether we're going to approve or deny CUP applications in the ordinance.
Right.
We just have to have an intent. Right. And honestly, I don't think it's that much of a burden to say this ADU you have now needs to be rented long-term instead of short-term. It's still right. Revenue potential.
And what's the risk of litigation in that case? That's what you've already our other issues.
Yeah, I would put it in, and we'll just, like I say, when they come in for a CUP, then we'll deal with it then. If we've got 12 lawyers with them, maybe we want to say, okay.
Yeah, and the reality is, if they meet all the requirements,
then
I don't see why we would or even would want to deny them.
Yeah.
And if they come in with 12 lawyers, the process is that it goes through a judicial review in the town first. Mm-hmm. So I forget what we call them, judicial officer can make a decision. So it's not like we're opening ourselves up to an immediate lawsuit.
Yeah.
So I think the risk is low.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good provision to stick in there.
Okay.
Sounds good. I have a question.
Yeah.
And you'd have to look this up to double check me, but it does seem like currently our CUP part of the ordinance does say that it transfers with to a new owner. I mean, it's like, that's kind of the default is the conditional use will transfer on sale. Probably.
So I guess the question for Kurt is, we have an intent here, the question for Kurt is,
and that's the part
this
where
is a separate thing for the CUP.
Yeah, I was going to bring it up tonight. I'd like to change that to just what we talked about.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Can I comment on your original question?
One second. Yeah.
So the original question that you brought up about, okay, we have the owner-occupied RSTRs, Curtis's thing, you know, so I agree. I think there should still be a limit and per geographical area just to spread the RSTRs out. These already de facto, if we're creating an ordinance that allows how many occupied full-time owners are there in Boulder? 80, 100, 120. That's as many as you know, the full everyone could do it. That's how many we're actually allowing.
Right.
And so without a limit of the ones that will probably be grandfathered in or however that works, and without a limit of you know, what we put on there, it seems like I could be surrounded by would be turning our residential areas into commercial zones.
Yeah.
So I feel like the limit and the geographical spreading out is very important. And what was the...
Well, we actually, we didn't talk, so I just want to close out the discussion about ownership change first.
Yeah.
Sounds like we're all in agreement there.
Yeah.
Okay, and Walt, if you could keep your question to the end, that'd be fine. So let's move on to the quota discussion. I agree with you.
Yeah, so, and quota, you know, geographically, it would probably be fairest to do it in proportion, how many full-time owners are in each area. You know, roughly Lower Boulder's 30 people. I think Middle Boulder's probably a little bit more, and I imagine Upper Boulder might be a few less.
Yeah.
We're close.
Right.
So I don't know what the fair way to do that is, or if we need to be down to the exact number, or... What?
I think it would have to be reviewed, and so we wouldn't lock that into the ordinance. It would be left up to a mapping exercise that would be the responsibility of...
Yeah, so I like the idea of a proportion of full-time resident owners. I don't know how we're going to find that out, honestly.
Yeah.
And we would have to put a provision for what happens when that changes. So, you know, if we allow 5 in Upper Boulder, and then the number of full-time residents decreases... We just have to account for that.
Can we legally put that in there, though, Curtis? Because that was what I got out of... Can we legally put that in there? Because what I got out of the notes that you sent since you weren't here based on our meeting last time was that we legally couldn't put that in there. And then that was also the same when I was talking to Mayor Cox on Sunday. That was what I got out of it, too, is that he doesn't think that we have that ability to limit it.
So, and when you say that... Let's just clarify, wait a second. When you say that, you mean limiting the number of RSTR permits we issue?
Or doing it as in zones.
In
either one. And that's what I just want to ask that before we keep...
Boundaries are a separate issue from quota.
Yeah.
Okay, let's deal with them separately. The boundary is the only way you can possibly justify is say, well, we want to spread them out, okay? And this goes back to January and what we're hearing a lot about, what's the problem? Does anybody know of an RSVP? Does anybody know of one that is owner-occupied in Boulder, that somebody's doing it out of a house that they either live in or live on the property?
Laurel in Upper Boulder.
Okay, is that her house on the, you see on VRBO with the living room shot and windows there?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
No, hers isn't currently listed. So one of your questions was to go through, so I did go through, and I made a list of all the ones that are both in town and out of town that are currently listed, as well as all those that have been previously listed within the last year.
Yeah. You did? Wow. Anyway, so back to boundaries.
Cool, all right.
The boundaries.
There you go.
The boundaries can be interpreted as being very arbitrary and capricious. And you might say, well, we want to do this and this, but somebody comes along and says, well, you know, why did you draw the boundary at the cemetery? Why did you draw it at the store? Why did you draw it here? Why did you draw it there? And it's, we don't have, remember the Moab case where they struck it down and they said, what are your facts? What are the law? You know, what is it that you're really trying to do? I mean, property rights, once again, the presumption is with the property owner. You want to limit the right, you need to have good reasons, and we should do findings around that. Now, the idea of everything I saw in the general plan, everything I saw that you're doing and everything, wants to promote young families, people staying, you know, making income off of their property, however, through sustainable, but also, this is as much a cottage industry as making jewelry in that bedroom, I guess.
The general plan also promotes the idea of preserving the rural character of
the town.
Which is the intent behind trying
and
to spread them out.
If we were being flooded with them, then I would say, okay, let's address the problem. But the question is that the case? And so then you say, well, it's a safety net, or...
Well, let me ask you this question. It's not necessarily that the town is being flooded with them, but Lower Boulder might be flooded with them. A neighborhood might be flooded with them. And that's the thing we're trying to prevent.
And by passing the ordinance, we are opening that door
for
them to increase to 180, you know, opportunities for STR. So I think what Matt and Perry, their path of logic is in the record, and it makes sense. I mean, it's providing all those things that they would look at to make sure that we took a hard look. We're making an arbitrary and capricious decision.
So we're trying not to turn one neighborhood into a de facto.
No, I understand. Yeah. The question is that happening?
The question isn't, is it happening to the community? The question is, will it happen?
That's where I'm saying you get on a slippery slope. It's like Josie said in the last minutes of the meeting, I'm like, cross it out. You know, well, we'll just make it less restrictive.
The reason why I'm concerned about it is because when I looked just tonight, 80% of the rentals were in one neighborhood. So to answer your question, is it happening? To the extent that most of the rentals are there, yes, it is.
And that the residents of Lower Boulder are concerned? Yes.
So the only question is...
So where are they in Lower Boulder? I know there's three down
there. There's three down on the ranch at the end, and the, then there's the yurt on Lower Boulder, but it's not currently listed.
I don't necessarily want to get into the deep details of this. I think as a planning commission, unless I haven't heard from Elizabeth and Colleen about it, do you guys agree or disagree?
I haven't decided, to be very honest with you. I haven't decided.
I think I see both sides of it really well, but, you know, if they are saying, okay, if we're creating a land use ordinance, right, there has to be an existing problem. And the idea that it's becoming a problem everywhere is real, right? And you could
when
see
when you say everywhere, you mean
in the surrounding towns, right? But when you do, you know, what Curtis asked and what Steve Cox asked me to do was also to contact the county was, is it a problem now? And if it's not, and we create the ordinance, then are we opening ourselves up for problems?
The existence of the RCR is a problem? Is that what you're saying? Is what a problem?
Are the current short-term rentals in our town creating a problem? And if they are, then the ordinance needs to address the problem it's causing. And if it's not, then what problem is the ordinance solving?
Right.
And that's what I just want to make sure going back and forth, listening to, like, you know, when Curtis presented to us, I don't know, what was that, 3 months ago now, Curtis, when you look at something and you say, okay, this is the address problem, this is the solution.
Right.
And, but yet all the things that we've discussed, I was right on, and then coming back and looking at it again and rereading Curtis's notes as well as listening to some things on, you know, just, I was like, well, do we have that right? And I don't know.
So my understanding with land use planning is that we're not making ordinances because there's already a problem. We're actually controlling the growth
potential
in the future.
Yeah, and that's what I was under the impression as well. And then it was.
Well, let's just say, and like a problem doesn't necessarily, we don't necessarily, a problem doesn't need to, doesn't mean in this context necessarily something bad that's happening.
Yeah.
The problem that we're solving could be that people want to do this and are hesitant because they don't know what.
And they want to follow rules and there aren't rules. Yeah.
And it's evident that the problem surrounds us. And all the communities around us.
And I would say that we do have an issue. Definitely residents have come to this committee to say, what's going on here?
Yeah.
I see more and more people who I don't know in my neighborhood.
Right.
So that's definitely something that we're trying. Those two things are the things I've been trying
to do. Escalante, what they had a moratorium to stop them, and now they just put, I think, a 30 cap on the town. So they put a quota.
Yeah.
Without geographical boundaries, I think they did a quota.
7% of the water connections.
Interesting.
Is that what they said?
Anyway, I'm going to ask you to let Elizabeth read her findings into the record, because Barry, you said you don't want to get in the details. The job, partly, is when you have an issue like this, to put the details into the record.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just don't want to talk in, I don't want to take this time to talk about every property that exists and who owns it. I don't think that's necessarily a good use of.
No, just to list the numbers so you know.
Oh, sure, definitely. That would be great to have in the record.
Let Elizabeth read her list into the record.
Yeah, there's only four currently listed that are within the town boundaries that are on either Airbnb, VRBO. The county was getting, I put in a request from Fallon, and she's going to get us back of who is paying taxes. Judy said currently nobody that has them can apply for a business license because we don't have that business license right now. And one of the reasons why we're not able to collect taxes on it is because we don't even have it. And so if they don't have the business license, and then Judy said that although some, if they are registered with Airbnb, those taxes are going into the state, but Judy doesn't know how to track them if they're coming to us. At all the other ones, we don't know. And what Mayor Cox said was he would be more concerned that the push be to bring everybody in compliance with business license and paying transient room taxes that are doing them.
So we should definitely talk about taxes, but let's talk about, so when I looked at Airbnb today, I thought six in town boundaries.
Okay. So this was from Sunday, and I don't know, and I made a list of ones that I had previously found that weren't there on Sunday.
And well, things are going to change, too, because of the season.
Yeah, the season's spring break started.
Okay, so let's
put it into the record this way, then. It's been happening in all of the surrounding towns. Record. We are seeing a substantial increase in traffic coming through Boulder. And so it's a reasonable assumption that this thing is on the increase and is going to rise. And therefore, you want to get out ahead of it. And we want to control it by geographical area and number.
Yeah. And I will say that of the six that I saw on one site, one was in Upper Boulder, one was in Middle Boulder, and four were in Lower Boulder. And there were two more in Lower Boulder, but those were Ellie's bed and breakfast, which doesn't necessarily fall under this, but I think the residents might care, like whether or not someone's come driving in for a bed and breakfast or Airbnb, it makes no difference to the residents.
Okay.
I need to actually say one thing on this, because the three, I'm sure...
Will you please come to the...
It's just...
I know, but... Can I ask that? I mean, we're not actually, we don't generally take questions during the discussion, so if you want.
My name is Donna. The three rentals at Sugarloaf Valley Farms are on a guest ranch. They are not RSTT, so they must not be on your list. Thank you.
Okay, so then probably one, Well, I don't know if I saw all three, but more, so there are others probably that I saw in Lower Boulder that are on the guest ranch.
I know there's a bunch up in that one.
Yeah. Okay, so back to the question. Colleen and Elizabeth, how do you feel about geographic restrictions?
I think the one thing I really liked was, I believe it was even Peter, your idea last meeting, but that it not be set. You know, that it has to be a fluid thing, that either the town council has the ability to change or the ordinance based on actual numbers and data of, you know, percentages of where people are.
Yeah, I would
say. And not that. Just arbitrary lines.
But they wouldn't change the ordinance. It wouldn't be that language, and that's what you said. It would be part of probably an annual review of looking at the conditional use permit.
Yeah, what I heard was either the ordinance could change or it automatically changes based on statistics.
And it went into this current draft.
Colleen?
Yeah, I feel the same way, basically, that Elizabeth does. Like, I feel like I don't want to do anything that's going to basically get us into trouble. And yet, I want to see, like, I feel, because we're working on the general plan, too, and that we are trying to look to the future, that that's why we're doing this, is because we are looking to the future. You know, I look at what's happening right now, too, with what Blake has just come in and asked us, you know, and what that's going to create as far as water and sewage, and exactly how we're going to accommodate her and what she wants. I look at the Sugarloaf Ranch and basically what they're doing and how if we can accommodate them in what they're doing, because these are businesses that are coming into our community, and I believe that they're promoting things that we want in our community, and how, because we're having some different businesses come in, hope you guys can see where I'm going with this, basically, that those are going to affect us too as far as the long term. And we're not, and we're just looking to the future as far, you know what I'm saying? You know, as far as trying to keep things in control, because we see that things are going out of control around us.
So then let me propose, right now the ordinance has a hard number. So let me propose then we move that hard number to a percentage of full-time residents in the neighborhood. And I would say 20%.
Now what do you think about that, Curtis? Like, is that better or is that different or? I'm not so sure about the hard number either. That I kind of have a little conflict with that because of what we already have and where we're trying to go, and
I don't know.
So this is what I'm going to recommend.
I guess you can, yeah.
Yeah, let's. If everyone agrees, let's add that language.
If you want to quote, I think you can put a number, because it can't be changed at any time. Or
yeah.
If you want to go percentage, you can do that. It's a little harder to go count who, how many full-time residents are in each zone, but it can be done.
Yeah. So I'm gonna propose that we change the hard number to a 20% of the residents
in the zone.
In the zone. And we have to figure out how we're going to find that number.
That brings it on a loose guesstimate about to 6 per zone instead of 4. That's my reading on it.
Okay, you want to say 15? Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyone?
I'd be more comfortable with 10.
Yeah. Well, the reason I said 20 is because you estimated 30 people in Lower Boulder, and that would reduce it to 3. Mm. So if we want to get it to 4.
Right.
And I don't think we need to really like decide that right now, because this is all still going to go before the public.
Yeah.
So at least we know that it's something that we're working on and we're trying to decide.
So let's say 15 for now.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can get a better count and understand what that means.
Well, if you want an exact number, what's the point of switching to a percentage?
The point of switching to a percentage, we want to reflect our original intent with the percentage that we
So based on each of the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So each
that makes a little more sense to me.
Yeah.
As far as being able to draft something then for the general, for the public hearing? Could you just do a quick straw poll and, you know, stay or go on the quota and boundaries?
Yeah, so who does anyone disagree about having a quota for the total number in town?
I don't.
And does anyone disagree about having a general quota that's geographically based in the three different regions?
Nope. Right now.
So
I was trying to decide what would be more efficient. That's what I wanted. So we all agree that we want an overall quota and a geographic quota.
Okay.
And that quota for now will be 15%.
15%.
The next item is the minimum occupancy requirement. And one comment there before we...
Where are you?
It's on section one. Right now it says, for any period between 1 and 29 consecutive days. I think we need to say consecutive nights, because I could rent for one night and say that I'm there for 2 days.
Makes sense. It is based on nightly, not daily. It's based on nightly.
So the question is, the question before us is, do we want to have a minimum of 2 nights, or do we want to allow people to rent for one night?
Okay. I know I've been pushing for a 2-night minimum, and you know, I've been thinking about it, and with a full-time occupancy or owner, I think that issue may change. I'm not as set on it anymore.
Okay. Anyone else have an opinion?
Where was the 1 to 29?
It is section 1, number 1.
Yeah. Say that again.
Section 1, number 1.
Bottom right of the first page. Very bottom of the first page.
Oh, yeah, there.
Elizabeth, you were going to say something.
You want that to say nights?
Yes. Does anyone else have a strong opinion on 1 or 2 nights? I think 1 night is fine. Okay, so we'll leave it as one. So those were the three main issues: ownership change, quotas, geography, and minimum. So let's go through the individual changes quickly. I'll just name the changes and you can tell me you have a comment on it. The whereas clause change. Section 1, number 4, bottom of the second page, the changes to the ownership and occupancy. So this is proving the lot is the primary residence as defined by the Garfield County Assessor and that the owner is not registered to vote in another jurisdiction. Letter 4. That is 4.
The next one's 4B.
4B.
I had to print a different copy. I don't see 4B.
I see 4B.
The RSTR must be their primary residence.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Next was the removal of the plat sketch requirement.
There's 5.
Yeah,
the end of 5 has...
Okay, sorry. I had to flip my page over. So the next 5, 2, 3 was the additional requirement of a site plan showing the property. So I have a question about that.
I don't know what...
I have about that. What does that get us? And what are our requirements for that?
I imagine for a conditional use permit, it shows your relationship, the house distance from neighbors, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Would
that be covered in the conditional use permit and not in? So what is the what's the intention of it written here as well?
This is the condition. Yeah.
And the reason I put it in there was just to see where the entrances and the exits were, where the parking is. To make sure that when they come before you, you've got something to say, oh, well, you've got to put a sign here at the head of the driveway so they're not knocking on the other doors. And then the parking's going to go here. You're going to do that.
So you have to show the fire exits and so on.
You know, your fire, I mean, It just gives you the layout so that you get a comfort level that this thing is going to be safe and...
Okay.
Okay. Next, right below that, actually right below that, in no event shall more than one guest or group occupy the lot at any given time. How come?
I don't know how you're going to do that.
So
that's just kind of my own question in a way.
How do you enforce it?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think we need to enforce it, but if we have proof that someone violated it, it's reason to not reissue the rescind the CUP.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Now I can flip my page.
F is
the plat sketch. We no longer require that. And along with that, we remove the requirement for written permission. Number 6, one parking space for every 2 bedrooms, in addition to those spaces for the owner.
G was an issue. I'm sorry, did I miss that?
No.
Sign at the head of the driveway identifying the address.
My printer ran out of color ink, so I'm not... so the sign.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is, yes.
G.
Someone else has to read G because I don't see it.
It says the sign at the head of the driveway clearly identifying the address and name of the premises or other address.
Okay. Next is number 6, section 6. We remove the requirement for the property manager or owner meeting guests and change that to making arrangements for the ability of keys or codes to access the property. Six I, a description and a map. We added the requirement for a map of the property boundary, specifying public roads, public trails, as the only areas where walking, hiking, or access to public lands is permitted. What does that map look like?
Colorful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, can I just draw it out on a piece of paper?
It has to be topo.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty basic map.
Yeah.
Public roads, land status.
Right, but if someone says, like, here's the house, these are the trails, is that what we're talking about?
Are there any public trails that exist off of houses? I mean, I can't think of any.
Mm. Well, here's the thing. We are requiring that people provide a map.
I think it can just be a handmade map so that, you know, I mean, every property is going to be different. Every person is going to be different, so...
I was thinking of a community-wide map that shows public roads and trails.
Yeah, but
one map that comes with your CUP.
So you're saying that maybe the town create that map?
That would make most sense to me.
That would make most sense to me, too. Yeah. Otherwise, we're going to have a wide variety of quality of maps.
Yeah.
Right.
And we should provide it.
So then if we are providing that, we should specify that a map, you know.
And one of the basic things you want is something that tells them, that's a kind of a local map, say, do not trespass on any of these other properties.
Yeah.
And the main thing that got brought up, the last one that was this, was that it needs to be stated that people cannot walk from the property. There are no public trails. It's not to identify them. It was to say that there are none, and that it was walking on the road or driving to a public trail.
Unless your land abuts public land.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why this is in there.
Yeah.
It's just to show them, here's where your public lands are, and you drive to it, or if you want to walk down the road, fine.
I think this is a good thing. I think, like Josie said, we should have the town create that map so we know it's accurate and quality. So let's specify that.
So I saw one ordinance that it required that you, on your side of the fence, put private property signs for everybody else and mark clearly the boundaries so it didn't wander off.
I don't think that's overkill. Yeah. All right, moving on.
No border.
We say the map should describe surrounding private property where intrusion is trespass and must be avoided. So that essentially is on us. If the town is creating that map, then it's on us to make those boundaries evident. 3, it is the guest's duty to control any to control their dogs and other animals, not leave them unattended, and prevent them from roaming, barking, or otherwise creating a nuisance. Any comments there?
Outdoor fire pit.
Six, outdoor fire pit. If a fire pit is available on the property.
I think that one should include outdoor fire pit and barbecue. I don't think it should just be pits. I think it's any outdoor cooking,
if the property provides, you know, the provision for an outdoor fire.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know what the wording is.
Yeah,
but I think it should be more inclusive than, you know, just
it
a
should
fire
just
pit.
Be fires outside, and that includes yeah. barbecue.
Yeah, that's fire just pit. However the wording needs to be. But I felt like just saying fire pit was exclusive.
If there is a provision
if
for
a barbecue with the lid on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you want me to say about it?
Just instead of saying outdoor fire pit.
I don't know.
We should say if the property has a provision for an outdoor fire, and then the rest is the same. And you might say including barbecue.
Okay.
You could we use language on public lands. It's any open fire, including charcoal grills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Campfires.
Yeah.
Propane
exactly.
grills.
There's existing
yeah.
language for that.
Okay.
And that's the type of language that will be in your fire restrictions.
Yep.
It will tell you which ones are limited and at what times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving on, removing the dark time, it says, upon the guest's retirement to bed for the evening.
Yeah.
I don't remember talking
about that. My concern was it said that all lights had to be off, and if people were coming in late, we discussed for the restaurant, say, at 11 o'clock, and all the lights are off, and somebody ends up having a lawsuit because they had no way to see to get in. I mean, it's a safety issue to require that there are no lights, and this is a commercial action, right? It's a transaction. It's a liability.
So what's the intent of this?
Was that the lights still go off, but it's when they get home. Yeah. I think it's what it was. I don't remember putting that
light. It was really geared toward
Well, no, but is the intent to keep the property safe?
Safe, and so, yeah, for the guests, but also to protect dark sky. That was the original
right.
Issue, was that these lights are left on all night long.
Right.
And there was an example spot. Our last meeting.
Right. So we don't want lights left on all night long, but we don't want them off to create an unsafe.
I think it would be wise.
Right.
I mean, if we're going to require that.
Can we say that, well, there are a couple different ways to address that in my mind. We can say that the property owner has to provide appropriate light so the guest can get in safely, but also ensure that it's not left on all night, like a motion detector on a timer. Or we could just require that.
Well, all it says right now is when the guest, this is assuming the guest is in and set up. Okay, so the owner turns the lights on. Hey, we're going to be a late arrival at 10 o'clock. Okay, fine, lights are on. Find the place. And then when they go in and get sleepy and go to bed, they turn the lights off. That's all.
I think so, and I think you could give a justification here to protect sharp
dark
sky properties. Yeah.
Right. But the point about a light being on for the guest's arrival isn't addressed here. Because if I'm worried about that, I'll just turn the... Well, that's what... You brought that up.
No, the requirement was the lights... I don't remember what it said before. It had... Oh, from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. The discussion was, okay, so if they have to have all lights off, and the discussion was that includes picture windows and outdoor lighting and all that, and I said, that's crazy.
So your concern is that if we're telling them they need to turn all lights off at 10, that's not reasonable.
That's not reasonable.
So we're changing that instead of... Everything has to be off at 10. We're saying when you go to bed, turn the lights off.
Yeah, I just change it to...
Yeah, I mean, we didn't come up with that language, but yeah.
Well, and I suggested last time that in the conditional use permit, it's required that the property owner, all the exterior lights are set for dark sky, so it's not... They're already shielded down, so it's not a big issue.
Right.
Regardless.
Yeah.
But we don't have that yet in our ordinances.
Can we make a recommendation here? To say that we recommend that all external lights comply with dark sky ordinance, and maybe that there are, well, just make a recommendation rather than a requirement.
That would be good. That would be good to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it.
So we'll keep the language as is, and also add a recommendation to that all exterior lights comply with the pending dark sky. Is it an ordinance?
Not yet.
Well, the pending ordinance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe consider the pending ordinance. I'm sure Curtis will write the right plan.
Jump on this dark sky.
Yeah.
I love dark sky.
And the last change is that contact numbers for the manager and owner, if different, and all available emergency services essentially be provided.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Good.
So I'm going to review what we said we're going to change, and then we'll decide whether or not we're okay with that. We're going to change the minimum from days to nights. We're going to update the quota from a hard number to a percentage of the full-time residents in that geography.
At
15%. We decided that the town is going to provide a map, is going to create a map, and that's the map that we expect rentees to provide to their renters. And we're going to change the language about turning the lights off.
And the fire.
Right. And the fire.
What was the first one you said to change what?
The language about dark sky.
The very first one was change it to days to nights
instead of days.
Yeah, got that.
Yeah, okay.
What you just said.
So I'll just review it quickly. It's days to nights. It is the 15% quota. The town is providing the map. We are changing the language to be more inclusive about outdoor fire pits. And we are updating the language about when to turn the lights off.
Okay, good. And there's two, actually. I need it. And you want a non-conforming use ceases upon sale?
Yes.
Okay, you want that? And I didn't hear what you thought about these boundaries. Like I said in December or January, just... Is that okay for now?
I think the boundaries are okay. I'm happy with the boundaries.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So unless there are any other comments, we'll get a revised plan, and maybe we'll have a public hearing next meeting on the revised plan, as long as we can get it in time for the notice. Okay.
And I can make these changes pretty quickly and get them to you.
Great. So let's move on to the next item, which is general plan update.
Okay. So sent out today the edits that we completed this week. I have some copies. If anyone wants them. So what we have done is we've incorporated all 118 line items from the working group reports. And this spreadsheet supports that. What the committee went through each item and dropped your response. And if it was applicable to the general plan, there's also a section where you can find where that was addressed. So I would, at this point, it's really up to the Commission of Council on moving forward. And it makes sense to me to take the next month to give everyone a chance to review. It's a 27-page general plan document, but also to go through the spreadsheet and how each item was addressed for the working groups. And that's how we based all of the revisions, was based on working group reports.
Okay.
So, and if we do that, then I don't know I don't think a public hearing, it mentioned in our agenda to schedule a public hearing for this, but we still need to go to the town council first, right? Or
do we do I believe we do a public hearing here first. And they
so we may be ready next month for a public hearing.
Yeah. So the question then, and first of all, I appreciate this document. The revisions document that makes it easier to look at.
That's the non-arbitrary and capricious decision-making process.
So the question really before us is, do we want we'll take the next month to review. We'll talk about the plan ourselves in the next meeting. The question is, do we want to schedule a public hearing before we've had a chance to talk about it as a planning commission? My gut would say, let's talk about it ourselves, and then the following month, so in May, schedule the public hearing.
And I would agree. I mean, is there an urgency to have this pushed through without a good process,
yeah,
review process? And I don't think there is, so...
I don't think there is either.
No,
and I
had a chance to read it and adjust it and talk about it.
And I think there's a general benefit of more people. I think we get more attendance as the summer starts.
Yeah.
So it might be better to have it May, and then when it goes to the town council, we'll have more attention to it.
This is pretty much what you sent us on February 19th.
No, there's
so
a
there's
lot
more
of work.
Okay, that's
what So what, you know, what the committee did is when we started the process, we had an estimated timeline of how long this would take, and that was based on, you know, experience of revising plans and having a full-time, you know, staff to do that. It's gone a little longer, but, you know, not everybody was available. But we did 1 to 2 meetings a month, and every time we met was 2+ hours, you know, so... that's why there's a lot of changes.
Yeah, that's what
I really wondered. Pushed this last
yeah.
one.
Yeah. Okay.
Many members can.
I think by Boulder time it's early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just for the record, you know, a lot of gratitude to Josie because
yeah.
she's done
good work,
and that's not an organization.
Just turning this thing up.
That's all together.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess I'll move to put the review of this for the committee on the agenda next meeting.
Yeah. For the commission.
For the commission.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Next item is schedule public hearings for the general plan and RSTR. We kind of just talked about that. So RSTR will be the next meeting in April, and we will decide about the general plan at that same meeting in April.
Yeah.
Also, we want to have. You're not going to have a special meeting, you just want to have a public hearing as usual, before or with the regular
yes.
meeting on the
11th. That's
like
what I would recommend.
Would it start at 6?
Your choice, if you want to start earlier or...
You want to start at 6?
My concern with starting earlier is that some people might not get the message and show up at 7.
Well, thinking that maybe you want to... Okay, here's me.
Well,
looking ahead, you want to add another agenda item on the thing that Steve, the town council brought up about the light manufacturing zone stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole new separate discussion, but it is an important discussion to start. So assuming you want to have that on the agenda for the next meeting, do you want to have, well, it's up to you how you want to time it or whatever.
So if we add time to the meeting, let's say we make the meeting earlier, my recommendation would be we don't start the public hearing until 7. So we discuss our normal business maybe between 6 and 7, and then start the public hearing at 7.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's, I'm sorry, I missed that.
What we're talking about is, do we want to add some time to next month? And if we add time, my concern is if we make the meeting earlier, some people in the public might show up
at 7.
So if we make the meeting earlier, I would say we don't start the public hearing until 7 when people normally show up.
Okay.
So. I guess I will move to hold our regular meeting at 6 next month.
Public hearing starting at 7.
Public hearing starting at 7.
Sorry.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Next is talking about the public comment policy, which we tested out during this meeting, of allowing public comments at the beginning of the meeting for people who don't want to sit through the entire meeting. I think it went pretty well.
As long as there's a time limit.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That it needed to be kept to, you know, because if more people had come, Blake used all the time available.
Right.
And so it had other people. I think that I would say, you know, it's a 15-minute,
10.
You know,
I believe,
and
like,
move on. Because we were here, you know, it went on for a long time.
Yeah, I think it went on until, if I remember correctly, around 7:20.
Yeah, it was over 15 minutes.
And we started a little bit late. So, limited to 15 minutes?
I would put it at 10. We always have more business than we can seem to be able to do all the time.
Especially if you're going to have
And we do have public commenting on the end.
Yeah.
And we have public hearings.
Okay, the recommendation is for 10 minutes, limited to, well, first of all, does everyone agree we should continue to have it?
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so the recommendation is to limit it to 10 minutes at the beginning of the meeting? I move to...
Can I say...
Yeah, sure.
So how about 5 minutes per each person? Or like, what if we have two or three people and they each get 5 minutes? Or what do you think, 5, 10, just in general? I mean, I'm totally up for whatever.
I feel like we need an actual cap where we know we can start business.
Yeah. Okay.
And it allows people, you know, they have 1 or 2 minutes to...
Even that.
They should be brief comments in the beginning. I mean, what are we... Unless they've signed up for it to be on the agenda for a specific issue.
Right.
What are they going to be talking about?
And then what do we do with these comments? I mean, that's kind of what I was wondering too. So these comments, will they come into our agenda, or will they be things that...
It's more for the public, for anyone who wants to yell at us without sitting through the meeting.
Can I ask a question about that?
Can I please ask you to come to the... I mean, is this what we're supposed to be doing?
Yes.
Policy.
Yes, yeah. So this is our policy. I'm sorry, but this is our policy.
I don't mind.
Yeah,
just,
okay.
Are you...
So would you state your name, please?
My name is Donna.
Thank you. Colin. And why are...
Again.
And just the reason why we ask people to state their name before they speak is for the recording, so it's easy
exactly.
to pick.
Yeah.
I just would like to know if you're changing the comment period, will there still be a comment period afterwards?
There was.
Thank you.
So, it's a good question. What's the point of doing it?
Yeah.
Elizabeth said that this is how the school board meeting went, yeah. And it flows much better.
It's just a nice, you know, because then people can say things too and then just leave. And it's also, it allows people that can't stay the whole time or can only be here. It gives people both options.
And so what
kinds
of things?
And if our goal is to listen to the public, it gives them more power, in my opinion.
What kinds of things come up in the school board meeting, in that first thing?
Just, it's totally random.
Okay.
You know what people want to talk about. I just think it's a nice setup.
Okay.
So we're going to take any kind of comments that anybody in the public wants to make for the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we could limit them to 2 minutes each, but I think...
That's what, yeah.
Are they even to be directed toward the agenda?
That's
not necessarily. If someone wants to address something or ask a simple question,
or just ask questions.
Yeah.
I think it encourages people to ask questions and not just do things.
Yeah.
We can always change it if it doesn't work and it tends to derail our meetings.
Yeah.
Then we change.
Yeah. Okay. So. Sure, Mark. Yeah.
Mark, also, the problem with what Blake did was that there should have been an agenda item, that you shouldn't listen to that, it should have been on the agenda. It should be an agenda item. And I like this idea of giving somebody an opportunity to front and behind ask questions, clarify things, you know, they make a statement they have to leave, but when they're bringing new business before you guys, it has to be on the agenda, they should be allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I want to move to public comments. Sure. Yeah. I want to move to public comments because this is our last agenda item. So are we all in agreement that we're going to add 10 minutes at the beginning of the meeting for public comments?
Yes.
Okay. Should I make a motion?
I didn't agree.
I move to change our agenda to add a 10-minute initial public comment period to the beginning of the meeting.
I second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right. The eyes have it.
We can change it if we want.
Yeah. So I think it's a toss up. What Mark said is a legitimate concern that people might bring things that are agenda items in that initial comment period. And I think that's something we need to be just on top of. That if someone's comment veers into something that should be an agenda item, then we just politely tell them that actually it's more of an agenda item, we can put it on the agenda for next time.
I think that sounds great.
And perhaps we can frame that at the beginning.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
And so what happened tonight too is, in I felt basically that that was something that you would address. Everything that was proposed basically was will be going to his direction. He doesn't really have a lot
until she gets past him. I think that absolutely the way that it should work for something like that is someone needs to go to the zoning administrator to get those questions answered. I think it does benefit us and the public to hear things like that. I don't think it's necessarily worth taking up 15 minutes.
No. Yeah.
Okay. However you decide to do that, I would strongly encourage you not to venture any opinions, though, because I think you encouraged Blake that it could be a campground. And I have not researched it, but it's a conditional use, number one. And the definition of a campground is an area of land which two or more campsites are located, established, or maintained for occupancy by a tent or recreational vehicle as a temporary dwelling unit for recreational or vacation purposes. So...
Yeah, so I want to, like, it's a good point. I tried to be equivocal when I say things. Right. So I said, I think the campground ordinance might be your best bet.
Right.
So I try not to say... the campground ordinance is your best bet.
If I think it would be better when they have specific questions about the ordinance that we know about getting things around, if they come and seek information. I don't care if they come and ask questions, but as long as you listen and just say,
I think
we got to dive into the ordinance.
Yeah, I think it's a fine line between someone asking, like, how many days can I park an RV? And we say, we can't answer that. Versus if we know, we can say. So I absolutely agree that we should be careful about the expectations we set.
I do think the idea should be it's like a 1-2 minute comment and moving on.
Yeah, because that wasn't necessarily a comment situation.
No, I think we all agree that, and we've probably spent another 50 minutes talking about it.
Yeah.
So
it helps all of us, so
I move to open up to the final public comments.
And you all can each have 15 minutes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Anyone else have any comments?
I have a question.
Question from the press.
I just wanted clarification this is just terminology and I was kind of confused though, but when you're saying a non-conforming use, that means that it's allowed now before the ordinance is created, so it would still be allowed after, so it's like being grandfathered, basically?
Yeah, I would say, not necessarily say that it's allowed, it's not specifically disallowed. Mm-hmm. And so if someone, let's say, before Boulder required a minimum of 5-acre lots, if someone had a 2-acre lot in a zone that had it, it's not specifically disallowed, and then we create an ordinance that requires the minimum, that becomes a non-conforming use. And a non-conforming use is a use that can continue, essentially because it's grandfathered.
Okay, and so those lots that would be non-conforming use, they do count within the number of lots that are allowed within each different area, or they don't count?
We haven't talked about that. So if we're talking about, for example, the quota, one thing that we haven't discussed, and maybe we should, is if we have a 15% quota, do the non-conforming uses count in that quota? My inclination is no, they shouldn't.
What?
Because we might draft this ordinance and find that the quota is already met in Lower Boulder.
And why would that?
Part of the reason we're doing this is to allow the residents the potential for income. And if we write the ordinance in a way that no one in Lower Boulder has that opportunity, then we haven't met our intention.
But if they're already there, they have that opportunity.
I guess we'd be penalizing the people who essentially were waiting to find out. And that would feel punitive, potentially, and might encourage more people to do whatever they want.
But Lower Boulder, if the Sugar Loaf Ranch is, in fact, a guest ranch, then that kind of takes some pressure off that, doesn't it?
Yeah, so there's, it does. And that's also one reason that I don't necessarily, the number we're talking about is pretty low. They would have to provide some evidence that it existed before. And I think at some point, I don't know if we need to address it or discuss it, but everyone on Lower Boulder could open a B&B. Our B&B ordinance doesn't have a quota. But that's not something we're tackling right now. So the quota does not solve every problem.
So what's the answer to the question about do they count or not? I think you said no.
My inclination would be no, they would not.
Okay.
Does anyone disagree?
I really want to see what's going to happen after the public. I want to kind of hear. I think that's another thing with me, too. At this point, I'm kind of sitting on the fence about a few things because I really want to hear what the public says.
Well, I think we should put something in the ordinance one way or the other, and that, if nothing else, gets the public to talk about it.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I'm hoping, too, is that we, since we're bringing these things up, that we're going to get this input from the public as far as what the public thinks.
Yes. Yeah. So the question is, how do we want to, the ordinance does not address it at all right now.
Right.
So how do we want to address non-conforming uses in the ordinance?
So Matt, I disagree. Because, I mean, the point was brought up that the three down at the Sugarloaf Ranch are guest ranch, right? And we have a bed and breakfast, so really we only have one.
Potentially. I mean, that's based on,
So I see it as a non-issue. I think the quota is there for a reason, and we've covered that well in the discussion. But I think the other thing, and I believe it was Colin commented, Lower Boulder is becoming a commercial zone. And that's why we're having this quota, is because it's a commercial transaction. And so I disagree. I think that the non-conforming should be counted.
Okay. So you say it's a non-issue because potentially there's only one.
Yeah.
So
it should be.
If it's if our percentage allows four, then it would allow three.
Yeah.
I agree that it's a non-issue, but I would argue the opposite, that it's a non-issue. We're talking about one unit. Let's let one more person, Lower Boulder, who has waited for this ordinance, actually take advantage of it.
But do we know that it's?
We don't. Yeah. So that's the thing. I mean, there could be already four there. So we think it's a non-issue. It's safer if we want to allow people in Lower Boulder to have short-term rentals. It's a safer bet for us to not count those. And the danger is that, let's say there are eight there now, we're allowing 12. But it doesn't seem like, there are eight. It doesn't seem like, I live down there, there aren't a lot of people coming.
But I think Colleen's right on, considering public comment, because in our high density zones, that may, the public may say that it is an issue.
Absolutely.
And that I think can be helpful in deciding.
Putting it one way or the other in the ordinance, I think will spur that public comment. We just need to decide which way we want to put it in.
Well, we don't have to have complete agreement. We need 3 out of 5.
We just need to have agreement to what we want to put in the ordinance. So, all in favor of saying that non-conforming uses do not count for the quota. Aye.
Do we have to decide that?
Do we have to decide that tonight?
Well, this is just for the draft.
For the draft. Okay. We need to put something in the draft.
Just for the draft.
Okay,
are we in the middle of the public comment period, though?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Now we're in the middle of the public comment.
I was going to apologize.
Yeah. Okay.
But I would like to, I want to have a complete ordinance for the public hearing next month. And I think if we are going to put something in the ordinance, we need to talk about it in this forum.
I guess let's go. I vote no.
I would like to pass.
Just a minute. No.
Let me, I'm going to table this and just test it. Do you have anything else?
I do, but also if you want to finish this story, so that's fine.
Okay, Mark, come on up. Thanks, Tess.
Mark Nelson again, I'm sorry to interrupt you, tell us a little bit. Before you vote on this non-conforming, I'm going to get pressure up on this time. Before you vote on this non-conforming part of what you're proposing, I think you need to brush up on what non-conforming is, because the way I see it, there are no non-conforming uses, because they're not allowed uses. people have done the Airbnbs without...
You are correct.
They're not grandfathered in. Because
correct.
They're not legal uses. So therefore, there are no non-conforming uses to be accounted for.
So I'll clarify what we're talking about. Once we pass this ordinance, we have to decide whether or not we tell all those people they need to stop or tell them they can continue. And what we decided here was we thought that they can continue. So once we pass this ordinance, they then become non-conforming uses. We have the option of passing this ordinance and saying, you need to stop.
Well, I don't think that's right. I don't think that's right, Curtis. Once you get the ordinance in place, then they can come and make an application like everyone else and get on the waiting list like everybody else. And if you think you want to try and give them an exception because they've already gone in place, I just don't think that's legal.
There is a case directly on point, Brown versus Sandy City, and it basically says you have to, the municipality has a duty specifically limited. If you don't, they can do it. The presumption goes in favor of the property owner.
Yeah, but that's, I'm not talking out of a broad sense, but... I want to get this argument because Curtis brought this up before and it has some merit, and this, the Airbnb thing is kind of a messed up deal anyway, but I think you need to brush up on these non-conforming uses before you start filling them, because they really are pretty specific.
So I'll try to restate what you're saying, Mark, and I think I understand what you're saying, that we essentially have the option of forcing everyone who has a current rental to conform to this. Now, we know that some of them can't, because not all of them... There's a possibility that some of them can't because they're not owner-occupied. They're not full-time residents. So what we have talked about, I think what we decided was, we don't necessarily want to infringe on that. And so we're making a conscious decision to allow them.
And I'm just saying that I don't think you can do that.
Yeah, and I think...
The Airbnb is a sticky issue, but
yeah.
I really think that you maybe should even talk to the state, somebody at the state level and see what...
Yeah, I think there are two issues. One is it legal? The other issue is, should we? And I think that's something you should definitely bring up in the public hearing, because I'm sure there will be varying opinions about whether or not we should allow the people who have already done it to continue.
I just would say that I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I think that you need to really nail this.
Yeah.
It's codified.
Right. And I think the other issue of should we do it, which way should we do it, is also valid. Because the public might overwhelmingly say everyone should follow it, should have to comply.
Yeah, well, that's one of the whole problems of the whole market.
Right. And there's another question there about whether we can legally do that. But I hear you.
Before you voted on it, I just wanted to make that comment.
Yeah.
I think you need to really
make
your decision. Let me clarify one thing. Those people that are, call it what you will, grandfathered or however, and I'm not saying I'm 100%, that's why you have cases every day and judges deciding and orders arguing, because this stuff is often not cut and dry. But the one thing that we will require, I think, let's say somebody has one operational now, and we're passing an ordinance, and that's the definition of non-conforming, non-complying, is that it was not disallowed here, it's disallowed now, so then they fall into that, and it's a state statute, and it's dropped directly into our ordinances. However, we can require them to come in for a conditional use permit, if for no other reason, and they have to comply with the business license, and the state tax provisions.
Yes.
And that's that's a very powerful tool in our favor. They can't get out of that.
Yeah. So let's talk about that one, because that one seems simple. If we are going to allow non-conforming uses, we should require that they get a conditional use permit so that they pay taxes and the rest. Mm-hmm. Does anyone disagree with that?
No,
okay.
I don't.
So then the second question is, I lost it.
Do
I have a question? Okay, thanks, Mark. It's so close. I called a motion to vote on it. What was it?
Whether they are brought into the quota.
Yes.
Whether they're brought into what?
The quota.
Yeah.
So the question is, once we set the quota, do the existing ones count toward that quota?
I think what we just said, that they have to do a CUP for it, just reinforces my point that yes, they do count.
I don't think that there is a legal argument to be made for it. I think what we need to decide is what we want to have happen. And then if that's not legal, then we can talk about that. But I'd like to find out what the committee thinks. I don't think they should count because I think we want to allow people who have waited for this to take advantage of it. I think there's a good argument to be made that they should count because people want to limit how many there are. So we just need to decide what we want on the ordinance right now.
Yeah. Because this is not set in stone.
Right.
Because the whole point is just to get the conversation
started. Okay.
So what do we want in the ordinance? So I will. So who is in favor of the, I'll reverse it now. Who is in favor of existing rentals to count toward the quota? Who would rather see existing rentals not count toward the quota? I.
Me. I.
I'm just sort of deadlocked.
Okay, so Matt votes president.
I know, I'm kind of like, but I just for the sake of...
And we should definitely bring it up in the public hearing as something we want to
do. Oh, I'm sure it will.
And maybe between now and then we can get a better count.
See, I'm kind of conflicted because we live in this little town where people decided to do something that's not necessarily... Is it against the law to have an Airbnb right now? This is why I'm conflicted. It's not necessarily against the law. Because we can't give them answers. We don't have it in our zoning and whatever. So we can't punish them for doing something, basically, an idea that they came up with to do something, you know, for whatever reason they did it. That's what I don't know, that's where my conflict is.
But we're not punishing them because they're just being counted into the quota.
Yeah, so...
Which to me, what is the intent of the ordinance?
Yeah.
And the intent, we have a quota in there.
Yeah.
And so that's why I stand that they should count towards the quota.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there are two...
I'm still conflicted a little bit with it.
Yeah, there are two conflicting intents.
But I want to...
One is... Sorry,
but I do want, like Perry said, we do need to put it in because I want to bring it. I want to see what how the public feels about it before I really make my mind up.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So the two conflicting intents.
And I know where you're going.
Yeah. Just so I can say it. One is, as you said, to limit the growth of these, and the other is to allow them for the residents.
Yep.
And so we need to find the balance there.
Agree. May I make a public comment?
Yes.
Do I stand up? Yes. I'm Pam. This is my public comment.
You're Peggy Smith.
Peggy Smith. Okay, first of all, as I understand it, having a RSTR would be it's a land use. It's a use. It would be added to the table of uses, correct?
Yep.
Yep.
And it would appear under the columns of conditional in residential zones.
Yep.
Period. Not commercial. GMU. GMU residential zone. Just simply not commercial zone. Okay, so you've got a table of uses. Now I think it says the table of uses that a use that's not on the table of uses is not allowed. Isn't that right?
And
so right now it it's not only disallowed, it's not and it's not allowed.
See, that's what I'm trying to think.
It's not legal right now. So it's not. So that's.
I'll send you and Mark the Sandy case.
I think the sticky part there is when does it become a use? It will certainly become a use when it's in the table, but there's an argument that can be made that like I use my land for things that isn't on the table.
Just look at what the words say in the ordinance.
Yeah, yeah, no.
If you want to change that, that's another matter.
I think the gray.
It's illegal.
It is.
That
phrase in the ordinance is wrong.
Well, then
Reject the grand bateman.
Okay, so that's answered. That has to come out then.
I would also argue if it were me, I would say when does it become a capital U use?
Yeah.
Because like I could have my family visit.
Yeah.
And then we can make that a capital U use. and put conditions on
it. But I think when you're talking land use, you're talking about things like neighborhood disturbance, parking, traffic, noise, lights. I mean, that is what you're talking about.
Sure. So, if I have 8 cars parked on my land right now, is that a use?
It could be a parking violation.
But my point is, it might become a use if we say that you need a permit to park more than 7 cars on your land. Anyway.
It sounds like something that's a moot point that we need to change the ordinance.
Yeah. That's
the bigger one.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about that next month. Okay. Any other public comments? Tess, please.
Dr. Brecken. So my other question is about renewals. I still feel under that also. So if someone at the end of the year, when their renewal comes up, is in good standing with their CUP, do they, like, is it basically automatic that they're going
to... They have to reapply.
They have to reapply, so then they're put back into the pool?
They're first on the list.
The first one.
Yeah.
I remember a few months ago, and I was in your community last month, so I don't know if this was discussed, when I brought up the idea of a lottery system. And so I don't know, it just seems like that means that the same people will just, if they're in good standing, continually get them, which I see on one hand as being a benefit because you have people who are following the rules and get it again, that's good, but also it seems exclusive maybe to those who won't ever get a chance.
Yeah.
The same people will be taking other spots.
We had talked about a lottery and we gave up on that idea, and one reason is because if I invest a lot in an ADU and expect income from it and can't reliably actually make that income, then that's a bad position that we put our residents in. Mm-hmm. So we agreed that first come, first serve is probably the best we could do for now. And that if that seems like it's onerous, that there are people who really want that use and don't have it, and there aren't any other problems, then I think the way we remedy that is by increasing the quota.
Mm-hmm.
Any other public comments?
Peter Betzer. One thing, there is a lighting ordinance. The town has a lighting ordinance. It doesn't mention any of the dark sky certification stuff, but it's been there for like 20 years.
Does the ordinance talk about lights on at night?
Yes. Talks about, you know, outdoor lighting at night.
Are you suggesting we could just reference that ordinance?
No, but I mean, I just want to make sure that's clear, that there is a lighting ordinance. I think it's either that we weren't aware that there was a whole dark sky certification, or it didn't exist when we did the ordinance 20 years ago.
Okay.
It was basically about, you know, your light shining into my window.
I guess it was something
that was ordinance. That was the, I
think
so, yeah. It might be a separate ordinance.
It's not like lighting ordinance.
We don't need to find
it. That was when Tina was on the mic. This whole discussion about things that are explicitly not explicitly allowed or explicitly disallowed. That's what we've always been told by planners. Every time a planner has come to help, they've always said, you know, that's the way you write ordinances, that's how you do planning. And this whole Brown versus Sandy City thing flipped it on its head, which is, you know, dealing with that and the fact that the conditional use permits have been flipped on their head also. So that kind of makes it hard. I just want to say lottery for the quota. If initially there are 50 people that apply to have RSTRs, then you're going to have a lottery.
Unless it's
certainly initially, you know, when it first opens up, there's going to be that, basically.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
First come, first serve, one more.
No, because then it's like, well, we're going to open it at midnight. We're going to have to, you know, click on the thing at midnight.
Buy your tickets.
Works for ticket faster.
I mean, the thing is that I don't think that would be fair, you know, and it's kind of
That's a good point.
Yeah. Anyway, probably not.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
It's
And I think looking at the how to deal with the existing non-conforming uses, aside from whether they're legal now or not, if we put them in a whole separate bin and say these are the non-conforming uses and they don't go with the land, they go with the owner, I think the new ordinance basically is kind of starting over, and then those things are kind of just, they're fixed forever. You know, they'll go away eventually. So that's kind of an argument for not adding one to the ordinance.
I didn't understand. Can you speak to
it? What you're creating is there will be people conforming to the ordinance, and then potentially there will be some people who are existing. They're not conforming to the ordinance, but they still get a pass because they existed before the ordinance was written. And those people that got a pass, they're in this special, super special category. Nobody else can get those. Nobody else can get that. And that's completely different. It's outside, essentially outside this ordinance will kind of regulate it.
So I know what you're saying. Yeah, and when they sell that property.
Yeah,
it doesn't carry with them.
Yeah,
or the ownership transfers them.
Yeah, or they just stop doing it.
So that brings up... go ahead.
If they're required to have a conditional use permit, then they'll have to keep that up to date as well.
Okay.
That's
all I have. So just... for speculation, if in our very public process there are a bunch of people who find out that this is going on and they suddenly all get ready with their conditional use permits or they just put something on Airbnb site, suddenly 10 people do that, then Josie's, you know.
So I think what we have to say is from this date past, you have to show evidence that you have had it listed.
Okay.
But
that amount of time, or
no? I think just in the last 2 years. But what Pete brought up made me think of some middle ground there, which is if we have a full-time resident who has rented their unit and they can meet the ordinance, I think that person should meet the quota. Should be included in the quota. If we have non-full-time residents who are renting out, I don't think they should.
I'm still thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I'm not going to suggest we change the ordinance because it's late, but maybe that's something we can think about.
You know, don't you think as a practical matter that because Rangel's allowed, anybody that's wanted to do it has done it? So I don't really see this ordinance creating a stampede. I really don't.
Well, I think we can totally address that by saying that from March 14th, you have to have done it between, you have to provide evidence that you have listed your place between March 14th, 2016 and March 14th, 2018.
March 14th what?
2 years. Yeah. 2016 to 2018. You have to provide evidence that you have rented it in the past 2 years.
19.
Oh, I'm just reading the agenda. My agenda is apparently a year old.
I don't know. What you might get away with is when it was first on the agenda to as an ordinance, what we call a vesting rule.
Yeah.
And I think we've talked about that before. So I would say that, I don't know if you'd win it, but I would say the town has a strong argument that from that date.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
So that's perfect.
Okay.
Okay. Any other comments?
But I don't have to put that in words. No.
I don't think so. Okay. I moved. Oh,
Troy. Troy, I'll be as quick as I am.
don't have anything logical to add here because I'm not even into the emotional side. And so I just wanted to put it out there because I think we're gathering at least of some of the people that feel strongly about this subject. And I would rather have this conversation one-on-one, personally. But I don't understand the concern. Like I don't, not even on a base level. And I would like to. And so if you see me around, you know, if you want my phone number, I'll give it to you. Tell me what concerns you, if you're concerned about short-term rentals. Because I don't have it and I want to understand.
You mean people who are concerned about allowing short-term rentals and having more people?
It seems like it's very emotionally charged and we're just having this logical conversation about it. And I want to know, like, the other side of the emotion on the other side.
You want to know why people would want to restrict it.
Yeah. And okay. And I hope that conversation is going on, too. And, you know, anybody that knows me knows that I'm more than happy to get into a logical battle about this. But I can't even get there yet because I don't even know what the emotional conflict is. So, yeah, get in touch with me, get in touch with anybody. Like, let's make sure that conversation is still flowing yet. That's all that I have to say.
Thank you.
This is Donna again, Owen. My pen was working on the track notes very well. I have some issues with the quota because I have issues with how you're dividing a town. I think that you can't really just arbitrarily do that. You could put quotas in zones because we have zones. You can't put quotas on areas that we don't have in our, I don't think you put that in your new. You want to make it legal that we have an upper, a middle, and a lower Boulder. I mean, I want to be part of your group, and I couldn't because I don't live in upper Boulder. To be lower Boulder people, to me, that's discriminatory. And I don't think that, and it's arbitrary. So I feel like if you want a quota, that's okay, but maybe you might want to do it per zone. Just a thought. All right. And then I was curious about my understanding of, it's one room per house.
It's one party per house. So there could be multiple rooms.
Who could rent two rooms?
Yeah. Correct.
Okay, but what if Ellie has two different people and she has two rooms?
She's a bed and breakfast. She's a bed and breakfast.
So she's not going to be considered an RSTR?
Correct.
No. Okay. Other people could become bed and breakfast. Do we have something for that? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay,
it's in our
I want to say, Peg, I appreciate what you said because I've always been under the impression that everything was illegal unless it was on there.
That's what we have.
It only changed because of this conversation with ADUs and what Airbnb is happening and Curtis and everybody else trying to say, hey, it's illegal. And I asked several people who were on the town council, you mean it's okay and because there's no ordinance? Yes, that's what we're doing now. So that definitely has to be changed in your, you know, if that's how you want it to be. If you want it to be the way it is, fine. If you want it to be the way we think is maybe more legal.
Well, it wouldn't change in the general plan. It would have to change in the table of uses and the ordinance.
Yep.
So.
I have a real issue with this. First day is not on the agenda, so you couldn't really talk about what we did. So we'll just consider early comments. With the town council wants you to look at doing something, helping Autumn, which is awesome. I was bummed out to learn that she couldn't do what she's doing, but we can't make rules just to help one person or another. So if you want to change the kinds of uses, it needs to go like this. It can't happen in just a meeting. It needs to be a real change, a legal change.
Yeah, okay, I do. We intentionally did not talk about the light manufacturing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so why shouldn't it be just light manufacturing? Why shouldn't it be more?
Because it wasn't on the agenda, I want to bring this up next meeting.
Great, okay. But it's my comment.
I hear it.
You're talking about, I'm making a comment about what I heard tonight.
Yes.
So, understand. And I heard that, that I just want to make a comment that I don't feel like it could be something you guys can look for a loophole for. I feel like we want to allow this for everyone. I do feel like we need to make our rules for everybody. We need to be careful we're not being biased, you know, and so therefore, because they have somebody not want to do it in the quotable thing, I just think you need to be careful with that.
So I'm still not aware of what you're referring to, because it hasn't been discussed in this meeting.
And then it's under a very big thing, other business.
Okay.
So, I was going to ask you one more question. That's probably what I really need to ask, too. Lights. Yeah, you can't make the that's just a, this isn't what I really have another question I really want to ask. I can't remember. Lights, it is already in an ordinance, and if you make a change, you can't make it just for people who run a business and say the other people can't. Like my neighbor Mark has a light, and it's in my, it's bright.
Mine too.
I can't say anything about it. I love farm. I don't want to say anything about it. You know, I wish she'd turn it off. There's a light on my son's property that I've been asking them to turn off. They're not really sure how to. It's like way up a big hurricane light. So anyway, you don't want to say you have to turn your light off that you can live on. And if I remember what my other question is,
just approach one of us if you remember. Yeah.
So just to follow up on that, I think there's
excuse me. I thought ADUs were not going to be our short-term rentals, and then I heard somebody say they are. So I don't understand the concern about all these extra buildings popping up as short-term rentals, because we are only going to allow ADUs as long-term, yes or no?
So there's been some confusion about this, including with Steve Cox. It was always our intent to allow short-term rentals within ADUs.
Oh, really? What's your intent?
What?
Yeah, and that's how it's written.
But it's never been presented that way.
It's been in the ordinance that way from the start.
So funny.
I don't think so.
If we haven't communicated that well, then perhaps that's on us. But it has. We've talked about it from the start, and it's always been that way.
Has the ADU ordinance been passed?
Yes.
Yes.
And so, so that's a huge concern.
So let me clarify. The ADU ordinance has passed, but the ADU ordinance says nothing about short-term rentals.
No, so, it specifically says that they can't be used as a short-term
rental. Okay. Right. So that's in the...
Unless
the CUP. Right. And this, so the I'll go through the reason we did it that way. We wanted to allow ADUs, but we specifically didn't want them to immediately be used as short-term rentals. So that's why we put the restriction there. We wanted the time to craft an ordinance that allows it the way we want to. So our intent was to restrict it in the first ordinance and allow it the way we want to in a controlled fashion in the second. That's how we've done it from the beginning. And Mark, you're at every meeting, so if we haven't communicated that well, then that's on us.
You're fine. Because this is my question. So, then I would like to understand, with all of what I think the majority of people in Boulder are wanting to see long-term rentals be promoted, allowing short-term rentals inside a house is cool, allowing, because you were going to say ADUs could only be, well, we'll only allow another, an exception to a 1 per 5 acre, another house we have to look at, as long as you employ somebody local or you let somebody local. So I don't think that if you're stating you have an intent to let ADUs become short-term, I don't know that that's a public.
Well,
I also know that most of us think that that's not part of what's been allowed. I mean, nobody I know has been told that this is going to change.
Yeah. So I understand your concern.
Okay.
I'll say again, it's been in here from the beginning, and because of the way the ADU ordinance is written, it is still restricted until and unless a second ordinance passes. So you still have plenty of opportunity as part of the public to change that.
Well, I'm saying I don't think this ordinance should allow.
Yep, and we should talk about it in the public hearing. The other thing I'd say, your point about long-term rentals, I agree, we want to promote long-term rentals, and that's another reason I think why we maybe forgot about why we wanted the quota.
Yeah, that, you know,
I have to agree with Donna. I mean, I agree. Short-term rentals, my vision is that they're in homes and they're rented as rooms, and ADUs are rented as long-term. So I just want to state that because I think I've added to the confusion because I keep bringing it up. So, yeah.
Well, the I'm sure we'll discuss this in depth.
And then we'll work it out.
Well, the thing is, too, if you can only have one. So you either have an ADU or you let that go and then you don't have the ADU anymore, but then you have to be, then you have to go back and start over if you want to have an RSTR. Isn't that what it was kind of?
Do you mean give it up, meaning yes. Give up the ability to rent it?
No, to have it, to have your conditional, to have an ADU. I mean, we
no, you can, the way that the ordinances are written now, so someone, because the ADU ordinance has passed.
Yeah.
Someone can build an ADU.
Right.
If and when this passes, they can rent that out short term under the conditions in here.
Yeah.
Only if you put it in there.
Yeah, only if this passes.
And then just to follow up again, the idea of instead of looking at upper, middle, and lower Boulder as these zones, I think looking at GMU and residential, you know, our already existing zones is a good idea. Mm-hmm. Because it states, you know, in our ordinances, the intent of each of those zones, and that would help the quota discussion as well.
We can talk about that. Any other public comments? All right, I move to end the meeting.
We have to set the agenda.
Oh, right.
That's upcoming business.
Yeah, upcoming business. Sorry. I move to close the public comments.
I'm sorry,
no. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Hi.
Agenda for next week. Next month.
Public hearing. RSTRs.
Are you going to do other business?
This is that we're doing now.
Okay.
That's all.
So we will
continue discussion on the general plan.
Yeah, we will have continued discussion on the general plan. We will talk about the light manufacturing use that the town council has requested. And I believe those are the three main things.
I have one.
Yeah.
There's a woman named Mary Beddingfield Smith. One word, Beddingfield Smith, Mary. And she's the head of the Planning Commission in Torrey, has been for, she's been the chairman now for a while. She's our seventh year, eighth year or something over there. And she's, she was instrumental in getting them certified as a dark sky community, which they recently were. And she's willing to come over and give us like a 10-minute, more or less, kind of presentation, because now what she wants to do is a regional thing. And she really knows this stuff. And she's worked with Garcade and Fuzzy's Lights, and she has a ton of knowledge. So if we're interested in dark skies, I think, and she won't even call them dark skies. She's got another name for it. Anyway.
So it's the idea that she would talk about what we would need to have in our ordinances in order to qualify.
What it takes for Boulder to become a dark sky.
I think that's worthwhile.
An IDA, a certified region.
I think it's interesting because, like you said, I can remember when we talked about them years ago. I mean, it was, you know, the dark sky thing. And
it's in our general plan.
Exactly. And so now Torrey, you know, like there's a whole certification for that, you know. And so it's in our, you know, we started there 20 years ago, and I would really like to see us follow through with it, too, and get that certification because we've talked about it for so long.
Is her presentation about how to get certified, or is it about the value of dark skies? I mean,
it's about what it takes in an ordinance.
Yeah.
Under IDA, the International Dark Sky Association, what it takes to be certified,
because
they have model ordinance, what they did in Torrey, how they got the lights changed out through Garcade, how they raised their money, why you need a nonprofit.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's
the nuts and bolts stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm interested in. Does anyone interested?
Cool. Let's just may not be the better month.
The topic came up in the town council, sort of. It wasn't an agenda item, but it was a thing that was mentioned.
If I may,
yes, go ahead.
Peter Benson.
There was some land donated by BCA for specifically for dark skies to the town.
Are you talking about recently or?
Recently, like.
Oh, okay.
At the last, a month ago meeting. Yeah, not the previous one, but like a month ago. So, and there's some money available. The town has money that's earmarked for that. So.
Peg, did you finish your thought?
Not exactly, because I'm thinking that, yes, that's necessary information of what she'd be able to provide that we don't have. But it also kind of sounded, based on what was said by Judy Drain, that there continues to be a need for whole education about what's dark sky and why should we not fear dark sky? I mean, the whole safety thing, like people think a lot of mega lights are going to make you safer, and the person who can answer the question with visuals and say, you know.
That's part of her spiel.
Okay, that was my question. Yeah. Was it, her presentation includes some education as well?
You can ask her any of those questions. She's read the Pablo, whatever his name is, book. The guy gave the presentation at the Escalante Arts Festival, the keynote speaker about 4 years ago, did the whole thing.
So I have a question. It's in our general plan. We've been talking about it for a long time. I would much rather have the nuts and bolts. I would much rather assume that generally as a town we've come to the agreement that having dark skies is important.
You weren't here 4 years ago when they tried to pass a real ordinance and didn't get very far. Because half the town showed up, you know.
Right.
We need
so
our
then
lives.
If we need that kind of presentation, then we should do it when the people who care are going to be present. So maybe the way we do that is have the nuts and bolts conversation so we can write an ordinance and then have her present at the public hearing.
Well, I'm not saying you should write an ordinance or anything else. I'm just saying it's educational, and if you want to hear her, she's happy to come.
Yes.
I'd love to hear.
Volunteer your time and answer any questions that you have. And
well, for my personal benefit, I'd like to hear the nuts and bolts conversation. If we bring her in next month, she'll have a pretty good audience for the rest of it. But I'm not. I think that's premature, personally. But I wouldn't be against it. So, would everyone like to see her, have her present to us?
This is how I'm thinking this through, is if she did come and do a presentation, it might kick off the, you know, the incentive to do an ordinance. And as we go through that process, she could always come back a second time when we go do a public hearing and be available for questions.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Say that again as well.
So if she comes and presents to us, it may help us kick off the development of an ordinance, because right now it's kind of up in the air, are we doing it or are we not?
Yeah.
And then as we develop that ordinance and move towards public hearing, she could possibly come back and be available for us.
I think she'd be totally willing to do that.
Yeah. Okay. It'd be good to get her in for the 10-minute presentation.
Yeah, the 10-minute nuts and bolts.
So we have a lot on our plate next month.
Yeah. And we don't even know if she's free next month.
No, she is. I talked to her this morning and she volunteered.
Okay, so let's put her on the agenda.
Okay.
Unless anyone objects. Okay.
She doesn't have a PowerPoint or anything like that.
She'll do a verbal PowerPoint.
Yeah, she'll just answer your questions and kind of give you a little history of what Tori did and the blood that ran in the streets.
That sounds good. So
we're starting at 6.
Couldn't see it.
We are starting at 6. We will do our regular business at 6. At 7, or around 7, we'll transfer it to the public hearing. So just to review the agenda, we have a continuing discussion on the general plan, maybe setting a date for a public hearing. We have the dark sky talk. We have light manufacturing and what that means, and the public hearing for RSTR. Correct?
I'd like to give her a time when she could do that so that she can then leave and drive back over the mountain. So you're going to start the meeting at 6?
Well, I would say we either do it right after public comments, initial public comments, or we do it right, we do it at 6:45.
Right after initial public comments.
Yeah, I think we either do it right after initial public comments or right before the public hearing, because we'll have a lot of other people who can hear that.
I'd go for right after public comments.
Okay.
I agree with that. 6:10.
Okay,
6:10. Public comments. You're not talking about the public hearing on RS.
We are not.
Gotcha. So tell her 6:10. You hear about 6:45?
6:10.
6:10.
Well, 6:10. Okay.
I have one more thing. Very quickly. And this is kind of a question to Curtis and Pete. The, some of the things you're talking about, okay, conditional use, you're going to be dealing with that. I don't know if anyone opened up the business permit application that I sent the link
I
to.
I saw that.
It's kind of a broken link. We had to cut and paste to be able to see it. That's what we have right now. Someone's applying for business license, and you're going to have to modify that, it sounds like, to accommodate like a separate business license for RSTRs if this thing goes through. Is that the kind of thing that you guys decide what you're going to put on there? Do we do that staff-wise, or the town council does it? Do you guys?
Judy's response to me was to bring it up tonight. That's why I did it at the beginning of the night, because she said there has to be something for it.
I didn't get a regular business license, but Tori, they charge $200 because they do have their fire marshal go over to an inspection, and you do have to come in and it takes up the commission's time. So it's a more expensive business license, but other than that, it's a business license enabled in the ordinance. And so just
is your question whether or not we need a separate business license or whether we need
well,
to fix the current...
Well, I
don't
know if you guys need to sort of recommend some action or if the town just kind of takes it from there. Or I wasn't sure. And okay, so we'll take care of that. Because right now the business license would be like either $5 or $25, right, for the classes we have. We have another class, I guess, with the $600 business license. No, I'm just kidding.
So we have to decide whether or not we need a new class to accommodate this. Okay. I don't.
It's just another one of those things. The conditional use language
that's
itself.
That's a great point you're raising. What do you want to charge for this business license?
Well,
And the thing is it takes, like you said, it's time. It's going to be, all of this is going to be time consuming.
It won't be your time consuming, but it will.
No, but our secretaries and.
Yeah.
I mean, we charge what it costs us. So if we need to get the fire marshal here to go to the properties, then we
make sure. He's right here.
I'm not the fire marshal. If you want someone to inspect a commercial building, I think it should be on the owner to hire an actual professional.
Yeah.
Well.
Is it a commercial building?
Let's not get over
there. Yeah,
here we go again.
I did I say anything about that? Just to send a normal business license and floor plan, you'll ask your questions, go through the conditional use process, et cetera, and get it all cleared up. Where's your fire extinguisher strike over there?
I move to close the meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone.
Every club.
I mean, we were very, I understand. I mean, I was very specific about separating these things and whether we can control them. Personally, I guess maybe I wasn't very sensitive in saying, like, yeah, we're just allowing this for now so we can all file it later. But,
well, it's because of the control.
I'm going to try to handle it.